Sebastian Thor. The violent repression and wanton slaughter continued for 7 decades after Vandyr's ascension to the ecclesiarchal palace. The resources of the Adeptus Ministerium were directed towards bloodthirsty pogroms and the building of immense new monuments to the Emperor and Vandyr. For instance, the Purge of Lastrati. On the hive world of Lastrati, a sect known as the Divine Army gained control. Their rigid code of behavior was ruthlessly enforced. Any person suspected of even the slightest digression would be hideously tortured and then executed. Whole swathes of the population were eradicated by genetically attuned viruses which picked out particular traits which did not conform to the Divine Army's image of a human being. Millions were enslaved and worked with no food or water until they died, running huge factories and mining ore from the depths of Lastrati. So many died that later gangs of slaves, hundreds of thousands strong, were used to dispose of the bodies before their own rotting carcasses were added to the funeral pyres that blacken the sky. The flames weren't restricted to the dead either, and the burning of heretics in one hive reached such terrible proportions that it is claimed the highest dune outside its walls is made entirely from the ashes of humans. It is known locally as the Hill of Heretics. The pilgrims who visited Lastrati can also see such sights as the Plain of Purity, 2,500 square miles backed 4 feet deep with polished bones, each individually inscribed with the litanies of faith in tiny letters. These are not heretics, but the bodies of the faithful who were laid out in masked open graves so that the emperor could see those who had been loyal. Then there is the Path of Damnation, stretching for 5,300 miles. This road is lined on both sides with gibbets every pace. Hung from these are the bodies of blasphemers who spoke out against the tortures and burnings. Such was the carnage wrought by the Divine Army that, when contact was re-established with the Imperium, there were only 2.5 million inhabitants left on a world that had originally boasted a population of 14 billion. These kind of religious excesses were not rare by any measure. Vandyr's insanity was ever directed outwards, and though distant planets boasted mile-high spires and cathedrals, the Terran Palace itself was allowed to fall into decay once more. Whole wings of the sprawling building collapsed from the weight of centuries, and the immense chandeliers and incense burners of the audience chamber were allowed to gutter and die, while the rest of the Imperium glowed with the radiance of gold and platinum and sparkled with the light of millions of rare gems. Vandyr's own domain became a dark lair of shadows and dank, chilling winds. Dust lay knee-deep in places. The ancient relics were tarnished and stained. Tapestries became torn and mildewed, and rats and other vermin left their trail across the priceless rugs and carpets. Occasionally, just a single candle would be lit in the enormous expanse of the great hall, with only the odd footfall betraying the presence of the brides of the Emperor in the darkness. Even during the day, the patina of grime and filth on the stained glass windows let through only a trickle of sunlight. When sweeping rains cleaned the outside of the windows, a shaft of brighter light might play about the floor of the great hall. But at this time, Van Dyer would retire to his chambers and sit for days on end in complete silence. The High Lord fell into long, nightmare-ridden sleeps, crying out in hysterical screams. His ancient body was pumped full of drugs and elixirs to keep the inevitable diseases and depredations of age at bay. However, with the guns of the Brides of the Emperor always ready to obey his will, the crippled High Lord still commanded with an iron fist. In his more lucid moments, the ailing Van Dyer could be heard muttering about the light, and the writings of his scribes recorded that his fear of light seemed to grow with every passing day. It was with trepidation that a young agent appeared on Terra, coming back from the northern reaches of the galaxy, around the planet of Dimamar. His report was disturbing to the High Lord's advisors and caused Van Dyer to break into a fit of apoplectic rage. Dimamar had denounced the High Lord as a traitor of the Imperium, and the ancient rites of the Confederation of Light were being reinstated throughout the diocese. The name of one man was heard again and again, all across the Segmentum Obscurus. His name was Sebastian Thor. None on Terra knew where this man came from or what his ultimate purpose might be. The puppet High Lords raged with debate for over a month as to what course of action to take. After his initial outburst, Van Dyer withdrew into himself more than ever, and for most of the council meetings would be seen huddled in the velvet and ebony throne of the Ecclesiarchy, surrounded by the ever-vigilant Brides of the Emperor, his eyes staring at nothing. As more news came in of the revolt, it became clear that things would have to be stopped soon. Within 3 months, another 80 systems had declared their loyalty to the Confederation of Light, and only the weight of the Ministerium's armies and fleets in other sectors prevented similar occurrences all across the northern reaches. The most trusted and loyal of the Fratares Templars were dispatched to deal with the threat, and were ordered to raise Dimamar and eradicate every living creature on the world. The war fleet was duly sent, but shortly after it jumped into warp space outside the Clax system, it was smashed asunder by a warp storm of gigantic proportions. The last astropathic transmission reported white arcs of energy tearing apart the hulls of the ships, the power of the storm literally twisting men and machines apart, turning soldiers inside out and disintegrating everything. The Clax system had been cut off ever since by the swirling tempest, and it is claimed that those who pass close by can still hear the screams of the dying and feel the panicked last thoughts of the astropaths echoing through the whole region. It is an area of ill omen, now known as the Storm of the Emperor's Wrath. With this huge blow to the Ecclesiarchy's military power, the whole of the Segmentum Obscurus erupted into rebellion. The cardinals' palaces were stormed by frenzied converts who tore down the hangings, burned the icons, and smashed the ornate stained glass windows. Through all the madness, the name of Sebastian Thor still kept appearing. Who was this shadowy figure who seemed intent on the destruction of the Ecclesiarchy, and with that, the Imperium itself? Perhaps he was some form of vessel for the gods of chaos, another Horus attempting to enslave humanity once more. Or maybe some other vile alien influence controlled him, one of the many creatures of the warp, or one of the immensely powerful elder races, hitherto undetected. As more information was relayed back by the Ministerium's agents, the High Lords were stunned by the news. Thor was no demonic entity intent on corrupting the Imperium. He was just a man, born in the Dimamar Scholar Progenium habitat. Interrogations of old companions revealed that he had been a devout, if somewhat introverted, follower in his early life. However, Thor recently claimed to have visions of the Emperor and warned that disaster was befalling mankind. It was claimed that Thor had cast an old preacher from the pulpit in the middle of a prayer session and denounced the ways of the Ecclesiarchy. With an eloquence and charisma the informants could not explain, Thor spoke to those present, reaching into their hearts and minds with his words. News of the incident spread, and soon thousands travelled to hear Thor's sermons and went away with a new religious zeal burning in their souls, spreading the message even further. Members of the Heretic Confederation of Light approached the young man in secret, and in his next service he openly declared his loyalty to the sect. Thor was brought before the Imperial Commander, Gaius Welkanin, and spoke of his visions and dreams, and of his ambitions to rid the Imperium of Vandyr's tyranny. No one could explain what raw power was held in Thor's voice, but the governor immediately swore his loyalty to Sebastian Thor and placed Dimamar's army at his disposal, as the adept had requested. As word spread, anarchy embroiled the Segmentum Obscurus, and desecration, looting, and wanton destruction erupted. Although Vandyr's spires were exposed and driven out with startling efficiency, it became clear that Sebastian Thor's army had grown to over 5 million followers within the space of a year, and the huge entourage was slowly making its way through the Imperium towards Terror. Even some of the surviving Frataris Templars joined his forces. Many legends sprang up around Thor and his long journey, and miraculous events were attributed to his presence. Some of this can be explained by the oratory skills of the young adept, such as the way the population of the planets he passed through would gather their resources to feed and house his immense following. Others remain true mysteries, like the navigators' tales of the utter calmness of the warp as they journeyed from system to system. Though the rest of the galaxy was still embroiled in the raging tempest that had engulfed the Imperium for many hundreds of years, the massive fleet of the Confederation of Light passed through the warp without hindrance. The Paternova of the navigators dubbed him Abstractia Preomnis, Master of the Warp. The news of Sebastian Thor spread from Segmentum Obscurus to other parts of the Imperium. Distance exaggerated the message, and soon Thor was being hailed as a godlike being, with much of its armed might destroyed at Clax. The Adeptus Ministerium could do little to stop system after system, diocese after diocese, from swearing loyalty to the new wave of belief centred around Thor. And despite fierce opposition from many cardinals and confessors, who saw their power, traditions, and whole way of life being destroyed, Thor's creed converted millions of followers. Cooperation and sacrifice became the doctrine of those who heard Thor's impassioned speeches, delivered from different planets along the route to Terror. Although many opposed Thor, all across the Imperium, the tide had changed against Vandyr. The masses had been pushed too far, and this time they had a leader to unite behind. The Wars of Apostasy. More disturbing news was to reach the Council of the High Lords. Until now, the Adeptus Mechanicus and the Space Marine chapters had played only a small role in the Age of Apostasy. The vagaries of warp travel made any long-distance journeys hazardous at best, and impossible in some areas. Instead, the Adeptus Astartes' planets and the forge worlds of the Adeptus Mechanicus became fortresses amidst a sea of anarchy. These organizations were on the defensive, protecting the few systems they could from the ravages of the Age of Apostasy and the carnage of Vandyre's Reign of Blood. Of all the Imperium, it was these small empire-like enclaves which survived the whole epoch with the least harm inflicted. The guardianship of the Adeptus Mechanicus and Space Marines protecting them from the worst events of that terrible era. With the news of Sebastian IV and the spread of the Confederation of Light, many Space Marine chapter masters in the Segmentum Solar and the nearest sectors of the rest of the Imperium began voicing their support for this movement. The Adeptus Mechanicus issued a summons for the High Lords to account for themselves and to indict and execute Vandyre as a traitor. Vandyre's response was to dissolve the Council of High Lords and order his remaining armies and fleets to attack the rebellious Space Marines and Cult Mechanicus. Many officers refused such a suicidal endeavor, only to be burned or hanged as heretics. They were replaced with more tractable commanders. But by this time, Vandyre's treachery was revealed. Enraged by what he saw, Gustav Hadratax, the fabricator general of the Adeptus Mechanicus, ordered regiments of the Martian Tech Guard to transport to Earth. These regiments were joined by Space Marines of the Imperial Fists, Firehawks, Soul Drinkers, and Black Templars chapters. Although much of the ecclesiarchal palace had fallen into ruin, the central complex which housed Vandyre's throne room was still an almost impregnable fortress. For months, the combined forces of the Tech Guard and Space Marines tried to breach its walls, only to be constantly thwarted by the Brides of the Emperor, who numbered some 10,000 fighters by this time. As the huge cannons of the Adeptus Mechanicus pounded on the walls of the palace, and the Space Marine assault squads fought down mile-long corridors littered with dead, the attention of the High Lords and Vandyre was turned outwards. But it was from within that the greatest threat was to come. The High Lord falls. Since the Reign of Blood started, another organization had remained apart from the bloodshed and devastation. Within the secure walls of the Imperial Palace, the Adeptus Custodes continued their eternal vigil over the Golden Throne. To escape the anarchy that prevailed and to ensure the protection of the Emperor himself, the Custodians had cut themselves off from the outside completely. Only scraps of information passed through the sealed walls of the most holy of places, and it was only when the Space Marines and Adeptus Mechanicus moved against Vandyre that the true extent of the treachery perpetrated by the High Lord became known to them. In secret meetings with the commanders of the Space Marines, the Adeptus Custodes learnt of the Reign of Blood and the Brides of the Emperor defending the traitor High Lord. The mysterious order advised the Space Marines to continue their attack while they would do what they could. The defences of the Ecclesiarchal Palace were no obstacle to the Adeptus Custodes. With their lifelong knowledge of the Imperial Palace and its thousands of miles of hidden conduits and secret corridors, a small contingent of custodians, led by a centurion of the Companions, made its way into the very heart of Vandyre's domain. Surfacing not far from Vandyre's audience chamber, they were confronted by the Brides of the Emperor. Calling for a truce and a parley, the centurion laid down his weapons and walked unarmed to meet the guardians of Van Dyer. For an hour, he made an impassioned plea for the brides to revoke their oaths, striving to convince them that they were fighting for evil, not the Emperor. However, they were not to be swayed by his arguments, and the nameless centurion had only one option left. Leaving his men as hostages, the centurion guided their leader and a bodyguard of 5 female warriors back into the tunnels. The brides of the Emperor were soon lost within the dark, twisting maze, but the silent centurion led them unerringly into the heart of the Imperial Palace. Eventually, they emerged into dim light once more, and were met by the companions who guarded the gate, the secret entrance to the chambers of the Golden Throne itself. The centurion explained what was happening, that the warrior women were about to enter the most sacred place in the galaxy, and he would bring them before the Emperor himself. They were to see what no one but the Space Marine Primarchs and the companions had seen for 6 long millennia. The centurion warned that to speak would be to die, and led them to the golden light spilling from the open portal. What they saw was never recorded. The companions swore the brides of the Emperor to secrecy. It is rumored they did indeed witness the Emperor himself, held immobile in the flowing energies of the Golden Throne. What passed between them and the companions is also a matter of myth. But when they stepped from the gate once more, their eyes burned with unparalleled anger and hatred. Without a word, the centurion once more led them through the dark places of Earth, this time leading them directly back to the audience chamber. Their leader, Alicia Dominica, spoke of the treachery of Van Dyer and his depraved corruption of the Ecclesiarchy. But most of all, she spoke of his twisted perversion of their order. Burning with shame and anger, they renounced the name of brides and once again became the daughters of the Emperor. All the time, Van Dyer had stood oblivious to the revolt around him, studying the tri-D Imperial map. Looking up from his introspection, he blinked in surprise as he noticed the assembled warriors around him. The distant sound of gunfire had faded as their message was passed through the Ecclesiarchal Palace. The 4,000 fighters who had survived the onslaught of the Space Marines and Tech Guard slowly filed into the massive hall. Van Dyer launched into a bloodthirsty tirade, explaining which systems needed to be crashed, issuing orders for fleets to be sent to eradicate Four and his following. However, even Van Dyer's scribes had deserted him, and he was left alone in the audience chamber with the vengeful daughters of the Emperor. Alicia Dominica confronted Van Dyer. Her words are now engraved upon the black marble sarcophagus that contains her body. You have committed the ultimate heresy. Not only have you turned your back on the Emperor and stepped from his light, you have profaned his name and almost destroyed everything he has striven to build. You have perverted and twisted the path he has laid for mankind to tread. As your own decrees have stated, there can be no mercy for such a crime, no pity for such a criminal. I renounce your lordship. You walk in the darkness and cannot be allowed to live. Your sentence has been long overdue, and now it is time for you to die. Dominica drew her power sword and held it aloft for all to see. Van Dyer glanced around the assembled warriors, his brow knitted in confusion. Shaking his head slightly, the High Lord whispered his last words. I don't have time to die. I'm too busy. The power sword slashed down, beheading the traitor High Lord in one stroke and cleaving his Rosarius in two. The reign of blood had been ended. Reformation. The Ecclesiarchy reborn. Although Vandyre's reign of blood ended with the death of the High Lord, the age of apostasy was to continue for many centuries. Much of the Imperium was still racked by warp storms, and all manner of small empires and kingdoms were being carved out by Imperial commanders and cardinals. The Segmentum Obscurus was the most stable, since the gifted Sebastian IV had begun his pilgrimage to Earth. However, with no Council of High Lords and no Ecclesiarchy, there was little hope that the rest of the Imperium could be swiftly restored to its former power. The Space Marine Chapter Commanders and the Fabricator General of the Adeptus Mechanicus set about resurrecting what remained of the High Lords of Terror. The copious notes of Vandyre's scribes provided damning evidence against many of those who had profited from the Reign of Blood, and the Fabricator General was adamant that all those implicated would face a trial for their conduct sooner or later. Many of the organizations were encouraged to purge their own ranks, such as the Navigators and Chartist Captains. Imperial commanders were promoted from within the ranks of those who had opposed Vandyre, while other High Lords were vindicated by their peers and duly kept their seats in the council. However, there was still no Ecclesiarch. The Trial of Sebastian Thor. Messages were sent to Sebastian IV, requesting that he journey immediately to Earth. His reply was simple, explaining that he had more work to carry out in the northern reaches before he could continue his journey to Terra. A fast transport ship was sent to collect Thor, but again he refused the invitation, insisting that he was not yet ready. Exasperated, the High Lords issued a decree declaring Thor a traitor and demanding he stand trial on Terra for various seditious activities against the appointed officials of the Emperor. Thor was taken into custody without violence, commanding his followers to stay their hands and let the Emperor protect his messenger. The galleries of the huge courtroom were filled with thousands of Thor's supporters, watching the proceedings with tense anticipation. The poor and wealthy alike travelled from all across the Imperium to witness the trial of the Emperor's latest saviour. The Judicium Terran became a focal point for the faithful, and the end of long pilgrimages. Many of those who set out arrived months or even years after the trial had finished, but were determined to complete their journeys and show their support for Thor. The prosecution of Thor was vigorously pursued by certain members of the High Lords, their pride affronted by Thor's dismissive refusals. However, for every charge there was clear and concise evidence of Thor's innocence. He had not incited the people to smash the temples of the Ministerium. There were documented accounts of his sermons decrying such behaviour. He had not fought against soldiers of the Imperium, and many of those who had been sent against him were now numbered amongst his most loyal followers. Finally, after 2 months, the trial came to its end. The High Lords consulted each other for 3 days, debating what to do with this charismatic young man. It was the Captain General Excelsior of the Adeptus Custodes who delivered their verdict. After explaining that Thor was found innocent of all charges brought against him, Excelsior explained the dire need of the Imperium for a new Ecclesiarch. Since Thor had been proved totally innocent of even the most petty crime, he was an obvious candidate to fill the post in such a time of spiritual need. The crowds roared their approval, thanking the Emperor in his divine wisdom for sending Thor to deliver them. Speaking quietly, Thor declined the offer and the council erupted into chaos, while the other High Lords ranted at one another and at Thor's impudence, and the watching supporters gasped in despair and disbelief. Excelsior tucked Thor aside and spoke to him. Although no one truly knows what the Captain General said to Thor, it is widely believed to have been, "You will leave Terra as an Ecclesiarch, or you will not leave Terra at all." As the hall fell silent once more, Thor announced that he would take on the mantle of the Ecclesiarch, but only on certain conditions. He was to have the full backing of the High Lords whenever he needed it. He would make changes to the organization of the Ecclesiarchy, and they would trust him in his actions. He also wanted to continue as he had been, moving across the Imperium, preaching to the people directly. It was as an orator that the Emperor had guided him, and with his sermons and prayers he would unite the Imperium under the Emperor once more. Naturally, the High Lords agreed, and it was duly announced across the Imperium that Thor the First was the 292nd Ecclesiarch. The Reformation. There were a number of important changes to the Adeptus Ministerium after the Reign of Blood, and throughout the Age of Apostasy. Many of them were at the instigation of Sebastian Thor himself, although Thor strongly disapproved of the way the Ecclesiarch had been previously run. He was enough of a statesman to realize that radical changes in the faith were not what was required. There was enough instability already, and what the populace was crying out for was solid leadership. Although many of Thor's ideas were never fully realized during his lifetime, the foundations he laid down during his time as Ecclesiarch continued to hold the Adeptus Ministerium together to this day. The first change executed by Thor was the formation of the Synod Ministeria on Ophelia. Although the Holy Synod remains on Terra and cardinals from all over the Imperium are free to gather there and discuss the issues concerning the Ecclesiarchy, the Synod Ministeria acts as a secondary governing body further from Terra. This has a twofold effect. Firstly, the Synod Ministeria relays and disseminates the dictates of the Ecclesiarchy and the Holy Synod, enforcing the laws of the Ecclesiarchy. Secondly, it provides a defense against the manipulation of the Ecclesiarchy by other organizations, or even a single individual within the ranks of the Ministerium itself. Never again will a High Lord of the Ecclesiarch have total power over the Adeptus Ministerium. In a similar vein, each of the dioceses were broken down into smaller areas. Again, this had two effects. Each cardinal had less personal power and controlled fewer men and resources. Secondly, with more cardinals within the Holy Synod, there would be more opposition to radical changes and plans, and so further diluted the power held by any one individual. Other transformations were at the order of the High Lords of Terra. The most important of these was the Decree Passive, 000-1288/M36. Amongst other prohibitions on military activity, the Decree Passive forbade the Ecclesiarchy from controlling any men under arms. Sebastian IV was ordered to disband the Fratares Templars of Vandia and any armies and fleets assembled by other members of the Ministerium while separated from Terra. This was duly done, but for one exception. Seeing that some military force would be needed, and not wishing the Ecclesiarchy to be totally subservient to the will of the Adeptus Terra and the Imperial Guard, Sebastian Thor kept the one army he was allowed under the Decree Passive. Due to the archaic wording of the law, the daughters of the Emperor did not break the ban. Incorporating the sect fully into the ecclesiarchy was difficult, but eventually they were renamed the Order's Militant of the Adeptus Sororitas. Although the High Lords were uncomfortable with this development, they had no legal standing to oppose Thor, and his argument that the Adeptus Sororitas would regulate the ecclesiarchy as much as enforce its will did not fall on deaf ears. Even with these major changes, there were hundreds of other details to be seen to. The scholar progenium needed organizing again. The tithes would have to flow into ministerium vaults once more. There were shrines to be refurbished and temples to be rebuilt. However, after spending a wearisome decade on Terra, Thor departed the ecclesiarchal palace and left the bulk of the work to the archdeacons and cardinals. He journeyed all across the Imperium for the next 80 years, quelling heresy and apostasy wherever he came across it. At the age of 112, Sebastian Thor returned to Terra. He was to live for another 6 months before finally the Emperor claimed his soul. A massive wing was built onto the Mausoleum of Remembrance to contain his sarcophagus. The week after his death was declared, a period of mourning, and over 70 million pilgrims filed past his tomb within the first year. Huge murals commemorating his life and works adorn the 3-mile-long passageway leading up to his burial chamber. The people of the Imperium still travel to Terra to gaze upon the face of the Emperor's most faithful servant. This history concludes in part 4 with the plague of unbelief. Thanks for watching, everybody. Please remember to give this video a like, subscribe, and share if you can. Thanks to everybody supporting the channel. You can see your names here. Thank you all very much. It means a lot. See you in part 4 and the conclusion. Cheers.